Okay, wonderful. Welcome everyone to the education panel. Thank you for choosing to join my room. This theme is important to us as a community, as I'm sure that you've heard from the testimony that was given at the beginning of the conference about the importance of education to our community, of the importance of us sort of knowing our history and being able to challenge inaccuracies, as Sir Geoffrey mentioned in his keynote speech at the start. And we know, especially those of us like myself who have worked in the profession, that there are clear disparities in terms of achievement outcome. There is also, you know, the school to prison pipeline, which I think will be discussed in more detail, perhaps in the criminal justice breakout session. But there are quite clear issues within the education system that need to be addressed in order for there to be more equality in terms of outcome, opportunity, etc. for Black students. So I'm really pleased to introduce my speakers. I have Sir Geoffrey Palmer here with us. I introduced him briefly I introduced him briefly at the beginning prior to his keynote speech. One of the things that I didn't mention at that time that in his extensive writing about race and race relations and racism, I understand that he also wrote a series of articles for the TES, the Times Educational Supplement, on how to improve outcomes for ethnic minority pupils in schools. So he's a really great person to have on this panel. I would also like to introduce Lewis Brown. He's a mathematics student, second year, I think, student at Oxford University. And he's also a tutor at the Louise Dacacodia Education Trust. So he's also going to be speaking to us about his experiences teaching in that trust. As we're going through, as per usual in the other sessions in the main webinar, please do feel free to put your questions in the chat. Both speakers are going to speak for sort of between 5 and 7 minutes or so about their particular area of expertise. And I will ask them a few questions, and then there will be time for some Q&A. Towards the end. We're hoping to sort of end this at about 12:40 or so, and then we'll take a break and we will rejoin the main plenary. So without further ado, I believe we have Sir Geoff here. I'm just going to ask him to unmute. Yes, you are.
Thank you. Good.
Would you be able to turn your video on, Sir Geoff?
My video, hang on.
Perfect, yes.
Oh. Now. This high tech. I used to write with chalk and blackboard.
So did I when I was in Jamaica, actually.
Well, this was a few years ago. But anyway, just to kick off, mm-hmm. I think when I came, one of the main problems that Black kids had, you know, in the 60s, was that this awful thing about they were educationally subnormal, mm-hmm. as I was designated. And that's associated with, and it is still here, but in a sort of a covert form, in that what they were saying is that Black parents had unrealistic expectations. That was the phrase used by the system. And what they meant by that is that you've got a child, and they're now thinking about slavery, you know? You've got a child and you want it to be a doctor. Well, it can't, because it speaks this patois. And this patois isn't really English. And that means your capacity to understand complex matters doesn't go with that language. And therefore, they say to the parents, you've got unrealistic expectation. What I did in the 60s, was to write articles to the Times Sup, pointing out that this is a slavery-derived language. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that it has nothing to do with ability and capacity to learn. And I think, you know, they may have appreciated that because they also had a psychologist. This is where we're coming from, called Eysenck in the 60s. And what he was doing was setting up IQ tests for Black kids to say they were less intelligent than white kids. Mm-hmm. We still have a bit of that with Watson, the DNA guy, who is still trying to say the same. And the government employed somebody recently who was sacked because that was his view about Black people and IQ. So we still have to deal with that prejudice, which is slavery derived, whenever we're dealing with education. Now, how can we sort that? Mm-hmm. In Edinburgh, we have a very big medical center. And what we noticed about 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, we didn't have many senior nurses who from the BAME community. I think there were four. And we set up a course. I was asked to help because I've got a concept which I call system consciousness, which I just developed for myself. And what it's about is understanding the expectations of the system and being able to negotiate them. And we use that as part of the concept of this course. And what it was to inform the nurses. These are highly qualified staff nurses, but they weren't in management because Black people can't manage. Yeah. And therefore, we set up this course, which was for the managers as well as the staff. And within, I think, just over 2 years, we've now got 28 managers from the BAME community. So to help people, you sometimes need to set up what are called courses which are relevant. And therefore, it's just a matter of negotiating the system that anything to do with intelligence. And I'll just end with two little stories about myself where we still have a problem in order because we don't have the representation. So that when people see a Black person, they don't think you can be the boss or you know, or be the senior person. And last year, I went to give a talk in the Edinburgh Festival. It's an international festival. And when I arrived, the attendant at the door said, "What can I do for you?" And I said, "I've come to give a talk." And the attendant said, "What time?" I said, 2:00. And she looked at the program and said, "Well, you can't be speaking at 2:00 because Professor Sujet Palmer is speaking." That's again, lack of representation and prejudice based on her education and her experience. That was the issue. The other occasion was I went to an institution that I know very well. And I said to the young man at the door, "You know, my phone needs charging and I've got to make an important call." And he looked at me and he said, "Do you know anybody in there?" I said, yeah, I used to know the previous boss. And without hesitation, he said, "Were you his chauffeur?" Now, where we still have, and I listened to the Home Office chap earlier, and he was just reading from a script. The point is that what somebody should have asked him is, why did this all occur in the first place? Why did this occur in the first place? We've been part of this country, Jamaica anyway, since 1655. Yeah. 1655. I'd have asked him, what entitlement does that give me? Because you've got people here who are white who've come to this country later than that as part of this empire. And thus we've got to be very positive, know what we're doing so that we can respond. Just as I said this morning, I had to respond to somebody who was saying somebody they'd chosen, you know, because of the race pressure now, and said, this person, somebody's complained that he has no link with this city in Scotland. Yeah. And I said, but you have a solicitor's, which has got the same surname as this guy. And then he's just texted me now and said, they've just checked with this guy and he's got a link with slavery. So I said, The person you are going to put on your plaque is a relation of the person in your city today. Mm-hmm. Because I knew the history. So to fight our battles, we've got to see where the need is mm-hmm. and address it.
Mm-hmm. So just on that note, actually, in terms of addressing it, because some of the things that you've referred to, I think sort of still kind of exist. So for example, you know, the were you his chauffeur kind of thing. I mean, I think Dawn Butler, the Labour MP, mentioned the fact that, you know, people also automatically assume when they see her in the House of Commons that she works for somebody else, or that for some reason she doesn't belong there. And obviously we've seen Black women MPs get mixed up for get confused for each other, and those kinds of things. And I think, you know, going back to I was trying to find some of your articles on the TES, but I wasn't able to find them. But what did you identify were the issues in education back then, and do you think that they have in any way been addressed by now?
It's difficult to address, you know, this, what I call prejudice, this prejudgment. That's mm-hmm. what prejudice is, mm-hmm. prejudgment. And what it is that because of the history of our slavery, and it is critical that Black people are perceived to be less intelligent. Mm-hmm. And that has gone through to the white system, the white mind. And even a tramp many years ago, he was on the street and I gave him some money and he said he wanted some more. And when I said, why should I give you any more? I've just given you some. And I said, why have you got that attitude? And he said, because I'm related to Robert Burns and I'm related to Shakespeare. Who are you related to? So they are these prejudices which are ingrained, which I'm fortunate enough that I've moved around so much. I know them and I've experienced them and I've had to deal with them. Mm-hmm. And therefore what it is we've got to get over that the only control of a white person to a Black person, and I've summarized it very easily, the white person have had to have gone through slavery. That's a control. To then suffer from all the prejudices and the negative attitudes that they have about us. Mm-hmm. And therefore, what it is that we've got to, when Black kids are not doing well, mm-hmm. we should ask why. Mm-hmm. We've got to say, why are they doing well? Because it's not intelligence or ability. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we, you know, those of us like yourselves who are trying to address this issue is to ask the pertinent question. If the children are not doing well, why are they not doing? And if you don't know, get me somebody who knows.
Absolutely.
And just again, whether it's with the Home Office, if you're not addressing this issue and you don't know why, get me somebody who does. Mm-hmm. Because it is not ability and not capacity. We're not asking the right questions. And what we need is a group like yours or whatever, who has a direct link with somebody in authority who can change things. Mm-hmm. If you're operating at a level that you're then just discussing it mm-hmm. with people who have no power, it won't work. Mm-hmm. The reason why the NHS thing in Edinburgh worked with the nurses, mm-hmm. it was a direct relationship to the powers that be, mm-hmm. that we can change things. That's how the system actually manipulates us. They put you in touch with somebody who has no power. Mm-hmm. Make sure you don't do that. Make sure you ask for a link where, when you say something, it will be given serious attention.
True. Thank you. One of the other questions I wanted to ask, we'll probably have a few more questions for you after has spoken as well. We'll do a bit of a Q&A. But before then, I just wanted to ask you, there has been a movement for quite a few years now within the education sector, and that has gathered momentum in recent months about decolonizing the curriculum. You know, our history is not taught, and where it is taught, and I can say this, I was an English teacher, head of department, but I can even say from my limited experience in the education sector, that when it is taught, even so, it isn't done properly. So do you think that decolonizing the curriculum is sufficient? Or are there other things that we should also be doing to improve our education system for Black students?
Well, I gave a talk in 1969 to the British Psychological Society. Mm-hmm. And it was trying to address this thing about, you know, decolonization of the, you know, curriculum. And in fact, how did I succeed? Mm-hmm. Because in 1969, that's post the abrasion process, mm-hmm. and post all my research work. So they had me speaking to them. And I noticed in the British Psychological Journal this year, mm-hmm. they're asking the same question. You know, so to me, it's not being addressed. It's not being taken seriously because we're not asking the question at the right level. Mm-hmm. And what it is that, yes, we must get slavery in the curriculum, mm-hmm. and it must be taught properly. And what you have at the moment, believe it or not, I am fighting the Edinburgh Evening News yesterday. I published an article, or somebody interviewed me, and that changed attitudes. And we now have a narrative for the most important statue in the middle of Edinburgh. Okay. If you've heard about William Wilberforce, right? Everybody has.
Yes.
But if you have you heard about Henry Dundas? That's right. My point. That's my point. In one, mm-hmm. because you would not hear about Wilberforce if it weren't for Henry Dundas. Mm. This is an example why we need the history in the curriculum,
yeah.
and why it is critical. Because Henry Dundas stopped Wilberforce from abolishing the slave trade for 15 years, during which time 630,000 African people were transported into slavery. He has the largest statue in the country in the middle of Edinburgh. And what I want, I don't want it down. I want, and I told the council, I want slavery on that plaque. Mm-hmm. I want it on that plaque that he gradually abolished the slave trade with one word, gradual. And that lasted for 15 years. And everybody, the newspaper is now saying, but gradual was a good thing. I said, it's nonsense. No. Gradual meant never. Mm. And yes. Prime Minister Pitt, I quoted him, this is the power of education. I reeled out Prime Minister Pitt, who was Dundas's boss. And what Pitt said gradual meant was waiting for a contingency and refusing to act until 1,000 favorable circumstances unite while the most horrific evil goes on. Now, the Prime Minister is saying it meant never. You have historians now saying it means, you know, it was the opposite to not immediate. That's in our education. When you speak to a manager who's interviewing you for a job, that's what he thinks. Mm-hmm. And he thinks we abolish slavery, so I don't have to be nice to you.
Yeah.
You know, and there's another case in Scotland called the Joseph Knight case, where it's a black boy released. And all this, the law books say Scotland abolished slavery with the release of that boy. Mm. That's not true.
No.
The boy was a servant. Mm-hmm. You can't abolish slavery with a servant. Now, the boy from Almond Town and St. Elizabeth, I'm challenging that. What did the guy wrote in the Evening News on the 13th of June? Professor Palmer is a chemist. He knows, so, and the other guy is an historian who's talking rubbish. Therefore, you should listen to him, not me.
Yeah.
That is where we still are.
Yeah.
But we need to get ours. It's an example you can use. You know about Wilberforce. Do you know of Henry Dundas? And if they don't, then you don't know about the history of slavery. That's why it must be taught properly.
No, absolutely. I completely agree with you. I was fortunate enough to grow up in Jamaica and go to the latter half of primary and all of secondary school out there. You know, I was fortunate enough to learn about Sam Sharp, for example. And so
right.
it definitely irritates me, to say the least, when I hear people saying, you know, the British abolished slavery, and, you know, because obviously it just completely erases the contributions of slaves themselves and the uprising, the rebellion. And, you know, I would rather die on yonder gallows than live as a slave. So, yeah. You know, I completely agree with you. And for someone in the chat actually asked, and just for the purpose of the attendees, to clarify, decolonizing the curriculum means essentially widening it and making it less sort of colonial in terms of focusing solely on white British history, essentially, and teaching the entirety of British history, which includes the British Empire and particularly Britain's involvement in the Caribbean and the legacy of that also, because that was definitely far-reaching. So I think that's one of the most important things.
Could I just say one more word?
Of course.
You know, Sam Sharp, I put him up on my Twitter on the day when he was hanged. Mm-hmm. These are sort of things we've got to do. Put up Bogle when he was hanged, the day. And thus we can do that as well. Mm-hmm. But the most dangerous thing is we've got, for example, a professor, at say Edinburgh, I'm not going to speak the truth, there's no point whitewashing, who gave a 3-hour lecture. This is the professor of law. This is the professor of, you know, civic law and whatever law. Mm-hmm. And he gave a 3-hour lecture saying Joseph Knight case meant we abolished slavery. And I'm saying it's a myth. How can Joseph Knight be a slave? He's living in Edinburgh and he's got a white wife. With slave in the Caribbean. And the fact is that he and I are loggerheads, but that is critical because a lot of Scottish people all around the world believe that case. And therefore what it is saying, we abolished that even before British slavery in 1838. Mm-hmm. This was 1778. Yeah. And thus when you're in an interview or you're in a conflict situation, the white person sitting opposite you knows that because he went to Edinburgh University. Mm-hmm. And thus he's saying, why are you complaining? You know, they're victims, victimhood, when we abolished all that. That's got to be taught. That's got to be taught. Because it will change white people's attitudes. Mm-hmm. We're not changing it by shouting at a statue. Mm-hmm. That's not going to change it. Mm-hmm. But they know we don't know that. Mm-hmm. And what you don't know is used to enslave you.
That's true. Thank you so much.
Okay, no problem.
Are you okay to hang on for a little bit?
Yes, I'm going to hang on. I've decided I can't go. You tell me when I've got to go when it's lunchtime, I think.
Yeah, I don't want you to feel like we're holding you hostage, but just after.
No, I'm used to that. My heritage.
Well, thank you so much. I'm gonna speak to Miss, but then I'm gonna come back because I do actually have some more questions.
No problem.
So thank you ever so much to Geoffrey Palmer. I'm going to invite our second speaker, Lewis Brown, who is a who, as I said before, is a mathematics student at the moment at the University of Oxford. And he's also a tutor at the Louise Dacocodia Education Trust. And he's gonna talk to us a little bit about what he does there and the importance of it. So welcome, Lewis.
Thank you. So so Geoffrey touched on IQ tests and how they can be culturally biased. And I wanted to give an example that I've learned about from 1979, a case in San Francisco called the Larry P case. So kids at that time were given IQ tests, and if they scored badly on the IQ tests, then they were put in special classes, classes that were called, the term of the time was educable mentally retarded. That was the term used. And black children were overrepresented in these classes. Mm-hmm. And the reason that black children were overrepresented was that the tests were culturally biased. Okay. So, for example, one of the questions was, what should you do if you find someone's wallet? So say if you're like in a shop or something. Mm-hmm. And immediately that seems strange because that's a question about morality in a test on intelligence. Mm-hmm. And if you're a black child, particularly if you're a black child in America at that time, you might think, if I pick that wallet up, then somebody's going to look at me. I think I'm pickpocketing, so I'm going to leave that wallet where it is. Mm-hmm. And that would be the wrong answer. The right answer would be to go to the front and to hand it in. So it was shown in court that black children scored on average lower than white children. And it meant that a lot of children who weren't mentally disabled were put in these classes where they didn't learn enough. And Larry P, who the case is named after, mm-hmm. Grew up not knowing how to read properly. Mm-hmm. So that's what can happen when an education system designed by people from one particular background is introduced for children from many backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey also asked the question, why are black children not succeeding? To link with that, I can maybe answer a kind of similar question, which is how can children succeed in the current system? So I've kind of done, I don't know why, in the current system, done pretty well, I guess. I think maybe the most important thing that I've done is sort of not completely rely on the system. So I've been good at independent learning. Mm-hmm. So what I was interested in when I was in secondary school, mm-hmm. was looking online at YouTube videos, anything to do with maths and science. And what that did is it showed me what maths and science were to mathematicians and scientists, mm-hmm. which is quite different to what maths and science means to people who study it in school. And so yeah, I wouldn't have known what that would be like if taking those subjects to a university level, mm-hmm. if I hadn't been introduced to it earlier. Mm-hmm. And when you get introduced to those things earlier on, mm-hmm. then when you meet those topics in school, you have a head start. And you can impress the teachers. Mm-hmm. And if you impress the teachers, then you get into the top sets, the top classes. Mm-hmm. And if you get into the top classes, then you feel like you're clever. You feel like you believe in yourself. You believe that you can, you know, you can achieve what you want to achieve. Mm-hmm. And so when I came to applying to university, mm-hmm. I knew what I liked because of my independent learning. Mm-hmm. And I was good at it because I'd studied a lot of the stuff before, I'd seen it in school, and I wasn't afraid to apply to the top unis because I believed there was a possibility that I could get in. So maybe that's one thing that could be an improvement to the current education system, is teaching children how to learn independently, how to find resources for themselves. Because it's difficult to be affected by cultural bias when you're educating yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think just to kind of chime in on that, I think one of the things that we should do, and I mean, even within the issue of obviously racial disparities and outside of it, I remember being, as a teacher, one of the things that really shook me was the fact that children were never taught how to research. And so you would set them homework and say, okay, go and find out, answer these questions about this particular writer or something like that. And they don't know how to find the information and how to kind of reproduce it or to interpret it in that way. So you have to teach them how to do that. And it's not considered to be a key skill. But do you think that Black students in particular need that head start? And so they need that independent learning and motivation for independent learning from an early age?
Yeah, I mean, the earlier the better, because if you're told at an early age that you're clever and that you have this head start, then you're more likely to believe that you're believing yourself. Mm-hmm. If you're told at an early age that you're in the bottom set, then you know you're at a disadvantage. Further on, because you might not believe in what you can do. Mm-hmm. And for Black students in particular, you hear stories about children, maybe you have an outgoing personality, mm-hmm. and the teacher might perceive that as just like, oh, it's obviously a Black kid with behavioral problems, mm-hmm. and then they go in the bottom set and yeah. they don't learn as much. Mm-hmm. If you're learning by yourself, then you can supplement that, and so it's not affecting you as much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Can you talk to us a bit about the Louise Dakakodia Education Trust and the work that you do there?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I've been at Oxford. There's a lot of time between terms, so spent some of that time, some of the Saturdays volunteering at the Louise Dakakodia Supplementary School, mm-hmm. Founded by the Louise Dakakodia Education Trust. So I helped with the secondary school children in maths and English. Mm-hmm. And in maths, they did exercises, and they have classes small enough that they can make sure that everybody's challenged, mm-hmm. and that nobody's overwhelmed. I think that's important.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, in those schools, they can make sure that if anybody falls through any gaps created by cultural biases in the system, mm-hmm. then they can be caught by the school. Mm-hmm. In English, they had a program where they centered the writing around Black figures. So I wrote about Dr. Jason Arday, who's a professor of sociology at Durham, mm-hmm. And Maggie Adrian Pocock, who is an astronomer. Mm-hmm. She's been on TV, various TV programs. Mm-hmm. So they have Black representation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they have role models that look like them.
Sorry, my apologies. I was just going to ask you, what sort of age groups do you teach at the supplementary
school? So it's a wide range. I was helping with year 7 to year 11, so that's like 11 to 16. Mm-hmm. But they also have classes, primary school classes as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so in terms of just a couple of questions for you, just based on that experience, before we move to the Q&A, what benefit do you think schools like that supplementary school kind of bring to our community?
Well, there's a benefit in having people from an African Caribbean background, mm-hmm. teaching African Caribbean children. Just that for a start, they have, you know, teachers as role models who look like them.
Yeah.
And they also, speaking on what Jeffrey was talking about with representation, mm-hmm. They might understand from experience how important that is. Mm-hmm. And so they're more likely to incorporate that into the curriculum, incorporate that correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and no, that's absolutely true. I mean, I know that there have been just again thinking back to my own time as a teacher. I think there has been work in terms of the underrepresentation of Black teachers across the education sector. So I know that there is sort of underrepresentation there also, and also Black teachers in senior positions in schools as well. So that's another issue that the profession in itself kind of has to address. But do you think my second question for you before we move into the Q&A is, do you think that as a community we should sort of seek to invest more in schools like that one, supplementary schools like the Louise Dacacodia school, and if so, sort of why? Do you think that should come from us as a community, or do you think that should come from more from government?
I think, well, it's important for the government to support any children in the country. Mm-hmm. And that means supporting Black children. I suppose that means supporting these schools because of the job they're doing. Mm-hmm. In helping them, stopping them from falling through the gaps. Mm-hmm. I've seen children who are struggling in the standard school system going to the Saturday school and get helped and be helped out, and seeing children who are doing pretty well get pushed further to succeed even further in the Saturday school system.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, That's really quite interesting. I'm going to thank you for that and sort of talking about your experiences. I think it's really nice to see, you know, a young person like yourself at, you know, at a university like Oxford and achieving in that way, and obviously being an inspiration to other Black students that you see, and also, you know, working with them in a sort of community-based initiative like that one. I think that's really important, and I think everyone here watching was really inspired to kind of see that. I'm going to move to the Q&A, so I'm going to welcome back Sir Geoffrey Palmer, as well as Lewis, just to kind of pose a few more questions. I'm also going to sort of scroll through the chat just to see if I can find any questions. I've seen a lot of comments, and I love the fact that people are having this conversation sort of in there. But I will also take a bit of time to kind of go through and see if there are other questions from those of you who are watching. So question for Sir Geoff. When you look at the education system, and this is quite a complex question, so apologies and bear with me, but you know, when you look at the education system and you look at the fact that not only is the curriculum, it's not decolonized, and even if we were to decolonize it, as someone pointed out in the comments, you know, having that history taught by white teachers themselves who may not have a proper understanding of that history or of the sort of colonial legacy that Black people have to deal with, as well as, you know, sort of institutional biases that Lewis touched upon in terms of Black children who are outspoken being seen as having attitude, and then their behavior puts them in the bottom set, and that obviously affects their motivation and their outcomes. When you bring all of these things together, just listing those, I felt tired. And it seems almost like the problems are insurmountable in some ways. So when you think about those things, do you think it would be useful to try to create some kind of legislative duty for educational institutions to address those issues? And if you do think so, what do you think that duty could look like?
I will start by saying, you know, what I don't want is for us to, mm-hmm. you know, start talking about education in terms of skin color or pigment. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because a four is a four is a four. It doesn't matter whether you're Black, white, pink, or blue. Mm-hmm. And therefore, what we need to stay categorically, that white, the curriculum is not right the way it is. For example, my experience with the curriculum for teaching about slavery is that some schools regard it as optional. Mm-hmm. And that is, education is about an option. Mm-hmm. If it's essential, it must be taught in exactly the same way as maths and physics. Mm-hmm. It's going to be part of your education. Mm-hmm. And thus, that's what we've got to challenge. Mm-hmm. That this history and must be in the curriculum, and it must be taught properly. Now, I feel that you can teach, black or white person can teach exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
The point is that we don't want only black teachers teaching history and white teachers teaching maths.
No.
You know, like somebody said, I'm a chemist, so I can't know about history. Yeah. We don't want to go down there.
No.
And what we need is to call out the system, which in fact it is not appropriate for a diverse society. It mm-hmm. is not appropriate. And somebody's got to articulate that to the system. When we talk about bias, mm-hmm. I don't use the word because there's no such thing as unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. You know, racism is racism. We've invented a term to let people off the hook. These are things which we've got to challenge. Yeah. We don't use those words because prejudice is prejudgment. Mm-hmm. And it's based on your culture and it's based on your experience. Mm-hmm. So we've got a job to do with white teachers mm-hmm. to ensure that they're taught now like the children. We do not want to hand on racism as it is to another generation. We've been handing it on since 1838 when slavery was abolished. Every generation is handed on the same thing. Yeah. And for God's sake, we must in fact stop handing it on. Mm-hmm. And we got to do it by ensuring that the teachers are properly educated. If slavery is part of the curriculum, just like maths and physics,
yeah.
And it's got to be taught by teachers who are properly trained. Because once we educate our children properly, then this problem will be solved. And what Lewis was saying, let me say to him, I completely admire and appreciate what you're doing, because in the absence of what I've just said, we are doing things to help. And, you know, some kids are lucky, like I say I was. Mm-hmm. You know, I went from one bit of the system to the other, and I was lucky. But a child's education and life mustn't be based on luck. Mm-hmm. There should be a purpose in the system, and it is our job to ensure that the so-called decolonizing takes place, mm-hmm. and that we ensure that what is needed mm-hmm. is in place, or we'll be discussing this in the next generation, and that's unacceptable.
Absolutely. I have a question from one of the attendees. They want to know what you think about the government's introduction of British values into the curriculum at primary and secondary school level.
I don't know exactly what British values are. I think they're human values in terms of humanity.
Yeah.
And therefore, to me, that's another fudge. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I don't know what is the scientific basis of it. Mm-hmm. You should ask that. Yeah. What is the evidence based? Is it evidence based, these so-called values? What we want are values in our society mm-hmm. that reflect our humanity. Mm-hmm. And those values are international or universal.
Absolutely.
And therefore, one of the you know, when you get nonsense like that, one of the guys who was the most pernicious slavers mm-hmm. actually says, and that's quoted to me last week, mm-hmm. but Henry Dundas said in Parliament that all human beings by nature mm-hmm. are equal. This is the guy that enslaved 630,000 people. But then what he didn't say, or what people didn't realize he meant, we can change that by law. Mm. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And therefore, when you're talking about British values, mm-hmm. are those changeable by law? Mm. Because that's what they did with the compensation scheme and the Windrush people. Mm-hmm. They changed the law and then disenfranchise you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So therefore, values must be international, mm-hmm. based on our common humanity, mm-hmm. and that these are not, should be tampered by the law. So I want that to be challenged, the scientific basis. What is so-called British values?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Ask them that.
No, I mean, I remember when those came in, actually, because I was in the early stages of my teaching career then, and I remember thinking, this is the most ridiculous thing, and it's pure nationalism, to be perfectly honest. So yeah, I agree with you. They are just human values that everyone should have. And this idea is
British value is slavery. Mm. Chattel slavery, where to say people are not people, they're property. Is it British values just to say Windrush, the way they're treated? Yeah. Is it British values to the way we were brought up in the colonies? It's nonsense. Those are the values we should be learning. I hope those are included.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. For Lewis, just as you mentioned him there, I think everyone in the comments is really impressed with you and what you're doing. I think someone has asked if you can post a link just while you're there in the chat for the Louise Dacacodia supplementary school, because they wanted to kind of look into it a bit more and sort of see what it's about. So would you be okay to do that?
Yeah, I've posted a link. www.dacacodiatrust.com. There should be some info on the school there. Post that in the chat.
Okay. And this is a question. I've got another question here, which I could sort of address to both of you. You know, we've talked about legislative framework and sort of what duties we could sort of create. But when we're looking at sort of grassroots level, what do you think, or how do you think we as a community can continue to work to address some of the issues that I mentioned earlier that affect Black pupils and their outcomes in school? Do you think that there is anything specific at a grassroots level that we could be doing that we're not doing already, or that we can amplify further? So something that already exists, but we can work to expand or increase it.
Lewis, you go first.
I know that's a hard question, actually. It kind of puts you on the spot just a little.
No, he's younger than me, so respect for the young.
So the only thing I can think to emphasize is just support. Support for young people in the school, learn about, ask them what they're doing at school, ask them what they're learning about, get them to explain what they're learning about to you. Because the best way to learn is to teach someone else. That's what my dad actually always did with me, is after every week of school, he would ask, okay, what have you learned at school this week? Mm-hmm. And he did that. His philosophy was that he was the one who was in charge of my education, and he delegated to the teachers. Mm-hmm. So, parents' evening was about seeing if the teachers are doing their job. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it was always about, am I getting the right education? I'm listening to see me, hear me explain my day if something's going wrong. If there's something falling behind on, mm-hmm. that's something that the community can be doing to help young people, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And I know your dad is actually watching now, so he's looking on like a proud parent, as he should be. So, so Jeff.
Well, I think, you know, if I look at my background, my mother, you know, left school at 11, mm-hmm. and she didn't have the capacity to do anything for me. Mm-hmm. But she made sure I was warm and I was somewhere to live. And to me, what I think kids have got to see, and we've got to make them understand, that their parents are doing the best they can. Because a lot of kids may, because of all the media and whatever, may see their parents. People are asking me, you know, what was my expectations? They weren't any. I didn't know what they were. And my mom wouldn't know either. But she worked and whatever. And I've got great respect for her for that. And that's what drove me. So kids must be taught that their parents, whatever the circumstances, are doing the best they can for them. Now, what we could do is to say, well, if the parents don't have the capacity to help, like I could help my children because I roughly knew what to do. We need to set up with that money, which you're talking about compensation. I don't know. There's half a million this, half a million that. The point is that what the system that represents our community, the people who do, say like yourself, should say, look what the needs are of these children. And then set up proper structures. They're organized, not competitive, not, you know, political, to deal with what these kids need. And to me, that is what is necessary. You know, we can talk about it, and when we leave, nothing happens. But we, you can assure us or assure the parents. You know, he talked about a citizen advice bureau, the guy from the Home Office. I'm on the board of a citizen advice bureau. The point is, we look after money problems or people who, whatever. We don't need, you don't need that. You need a similar organization set up for that function that you've just asked me. And that's our responsibility. And if we don't do that, we're letting these children down. So if somebody could assure me that that is what you're going to do, because that's helping the parent. That's complementing. Who don't have the parents to give them the lead and support that they need. But that their parents are working for them, care about them, that's a critical part of the equation.
So having those sort of community-based initiatives that support parents, especially sort of working parents. To make sure that they can provide everything. I think you're right. You know, again, I keep mentioning obviously my time in education, but that's part of the reason I'm chairing this panel. And you know, I've taught children who struggle for that reason, because you know both of their parents have to work ridiculous hours, and they might have to look after their siblings and things like that. So those kinds of things also have an impact on their education. And I think I'm just looking at the time, so I'm going to to wrap
up. But you should get the statutory. That funding should be statutory. It's just like the citizen advice. Because if it isn't, you'll exist for a year or two and then you close. Or you spend more time applying for money than doing that job. So make it like the citizen advice in a sense that it is funded by the state. And it is permanently funded. Or else it isn't going to work.
It's not going to work. No, that's true. That's true. Okay, so yeah, I think... I would just, I'd just like to say, first of all, just sort of to wrap up, that, you know, we understand very much that the issues that we've raised here are multifaceted. There are lots of other topics that kind of overlap with even the conversation we've just had about support for parents. Also, you know, looking at our attitude to work, and also looking at our attitude, looking at health disparities and those kinds of things. So the other themes that we've discussed, which is why when I wrap up here with you guys in a moment, we'll be heading back into the main webinar so that we can hear the reflections and the discussions that have come out of the other breakout sessions. I think that I think it's a very interesting propositions have come up here, especially the idea of teaching you know our history and teaching it thoroughly. making that non-optional, and also making sure that teachers are trained better to understand, not only to understand that history so that they know it themselves. And, you know, I guess in my opinion, it should be a prerequisite for overseas teachers, because we have quite a few of them in the sector now because of the teacher shortage that we have in this country, that they also know that history themselves, and that that needs to be a prerequisite before they can teach here. Because I think you're right. I think it is important that that we have that to make sure that it's told and taught properly, and not just as a part of PSHCE or, you know, once every October during Black History Month. So yes, I would like to, on that note, I would like to extend my warmest thanks to Lewis and to Sir Geoffrey Palmer for giving up their time today and speaking. And I hope that you guys who are all watching found it really informative, and there's something that you can take away from this conversation today. Apologies if I didn't get to read out everyone's comments, but I was reading the conversation that's been happening, and thank you very much for contributing to that. We're going to take another short break now, but you can go back into the main webinar, where there should be another great music selection playing while we reconvene in there and sort of wait for the other sessions to finish, and we will share reflections. So yeah, if you can redirect yourselves back there, click on the same link that you used for this morning session, and you'll find us back in there, and obviously take 5 minutes to grab yourselves a drink. But thank you again, Sir Geoff and Sir Lewis.
And thank you very much, and have a good day.
Yes, you too. It's a pleasure.
I'm going to leave you now. Is that okay?
Yes, of course.
I've got all my African friends been phoning where I am.
Oh, thank you so much for your time. I really
appreciate you, and God bless you all. Bye bye.
Yes, you too. Take care.
Thank you, Sir Geoff.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Good luck.
Bye. Good luck.